Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project. Everybody's waiting.
Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is Thursday, April 9th, and I know I said earlier in the week that our next podcast would be a conversation with Carrie McDonald, and I was really happy with how that went. I think it's a really important discussion that Carrie and I had, so I'm actually going to hold off until Monday. Monday is the best day to release a podcast as far as downloads and engagement are concerned. So, here late in the week, I actually have something that is a little more timely, and I know I suggested that we were done doing coronavirus crisis content for a while, even though you're probably going to hear it mentioned in most of the shows that we do over the next month or so at least. But yeah, in my conversation with Tom, which got a lot of really positive feedback, and thank you so much for that, I kept mentioning over and over again a debate that I had had with friends for another show that I do. And this show might not be for everybody, but for those of you who enjoy a certain level of cynicism, strong language, and speculation, I think you're going to have a really great time over the next hour here. This other show I do is a comedy show, even though I don't anticipate you're going to laugh once during this. This other podcast, by the way, is called Portman Show. That's easy for you to remember because it's a portmanteau of the words portmanteau and show. We do it every week, and you can find it at portmanshow.com, PORTMANSHEAU.com. But it's me and my friends in Pittsburgh. That includes James and Andrew, who you know from the Discomfort Zone in various episodes of School Sucks, and also young Alex Bell, who you might know from the Discomfort Zone and various episodes of School Sucks. And even though I do not love my performance in this debate or anyone else's, I thought it was a discussion that some of you would appreciate, and I'd actually be very interested in hearing your feedback about it and seeing further discussion instead of on the podcast in the School Sucks Facebook group. But yeah, this is very optional listening. I just know there was some curiosity about it because it was mentioned so many times in the show with Tom Woods. And many of you don't know about this other podcast that I do that is, you know, frankly, one of the best comedy podcasts on the internet. And wow, I mean, what a claim. But when you're not a comedian, when you don't have a famous comedian's name to put in your podcast, you actually have to work for it. And if you like what you hear, and many of you won't, download the podcast and wind it back to, I would say, a good starting point would be where I became a permanent co-host of the show. That was back in February of 2018 with an episode titled Green Bean Dragon. Go ahead and start there and just listen to everything we've done since then. You're looking for new content right now. This is new content for you. So, anyway, I hope you enjoy this. I hope this makes you think, and I look forward, I mean this very seriously, to your feedback about this discussion and this ever-evolving and changing situation. So, like I said, optional listening, but if you do take the time to listen, I appreciate that very much. I'll throw up a free Bonus Friday tomorrow as well of our In Pursuit of Utopia show, and check back at the beginning of next week for my conversation with Carrie McDonald. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Take care.
So sadness aside,
all right.
Coronavirus and its long-term effects.
Yeah, so Brett, you don't think the world is going to go back to normal?
As much as the world went back to normal after like 9/11, it didn't go back to normal at all, but people just got used to it. And now, if you've lived long enough, you don't see a distinction between life before and after, even though there's been gradual changes. But this is like 9/11 times 10, at least. So...
What
I mean, as far as the, even the death toll will be more than that. So,
Well,
in the
US. I mean,
than 9/11.
Isn't it already?
No, I mean, it'll be like 10 times. Yeah. I think it'll be even higher than that.
What part do you think is not returning to normal? Like,
name a part. Nothing's returning to normal.
Jeez.
100,000 people where?
In the United States.
Oh, that's what that Fauci guy said.
Okay.
He also has a few like patents that he's involved with Bill Gates that could be discovered to be cures of the coronavirus.
Fauci?
Yeah.
Love it. Love conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I hear all your conspiracy theories.
I've actually heard a lot of them. We got 5G involved. We've got reptilian plots.
But I'm just saying, like, no aspect, before we get into that, because we should really devote a fair amount of time and attention to conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
No aspect of our lives is going
to be. So here's going to be my counter argument.
Okay.
Do you remember the Hong Kong flu?
No.
You remember the Spanish flu?
I was just a baby.
None of us do. We were all dead.
Yeah. Okay. Then we can go back to, it's actually not the Black Plague. It's the Black Death. I learned this from Wikipedia when I was looking it up last week. Yeah. Like, there are things that are mentioned, and I'd heard of the Spanish flu, I think, because it's a paragraph in a history book somewhere. And I don't think I'd ever heard of the Hong Kong flu, but like pandemics like this, at least so far as let's just look at like the disease and the stats around that. Like that shit's happened before. And it's, I don't know, what was the long-term impact of the 1918 Spanish flu?
So it's almost unrelatable to the current situation. We've had 100 years of government growth since then, and the internationalization and globalization of everything, and the centralization of so many aspects of our economy, of how we live, of security. And people have been waiting for 2 decades to crank up the juice on all of these things. Mm-hmm. That wasn't possible at the end of World War I, even though, I mean, what'd they get out of that? The League of Nations. So now we have the UN, we have all of these peripheral things that around the UN, like UNESCO, you know, all of these private foundations, the US government that's bigger than ever and also has the precedent for cracking down on everybody to keep them safe from an unknown and invisible enemy that could be anywhere 20 years ago.
My argument would not be that nothing is going to be different for a period of time or that everything is going to be completely the way it was before. I think 9/11 is another good example. And that's one of the things I was thinking during the break was like defining our terms. If we really want to get into this in a thoughtful way, defining our terms is important. And like Puke got at this a little bit, like what's different? Because would you say the world has permanently changed after 9/11? I would say, yes, you're right. But like we settled into what normal feels like, and now are there extra scanners and there's this thing called the TSA and Homeland Security? Yes, and if you're looking at the broad strokes of history and certainly from a libertarian lens, can you say like totalitarianism has marched a step forward? Yes, you can, but it's not like holy shit, like before we were just all happy-go-lucky individuals and everything was fine. And now like it is the worst possible case scenario, Animal Farm, 1984.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say that, so my personal example is we went on this retreat in senior year of high school because I went to Catholic school. And this was like 3 days where we were out in the middle of kind of nowhere, Ohio, and just the like 87 of us in our senior class. And we spent a lot of time and like we had little groups and like we had some pretty powerful moments, including like one night where people were talking about when they were like stabbing themselves like in a suicide attempt and like some really deep shit.
Okay.
And after that,
good times.
After that, like, oh man, we like as a class, just everyone was just, if not extra friendly in a particular way, there was just like a knowing look in the hallways of like, yeah, okay, like we're this group now. I don't know, 3 months later, it was like, there's that thought. And so maybe people were like kind of a little bit less dicks to each other or a little bit more friendly, but it got back to a point where it's like, okay, yeah, like I wasn't friends with Cody Wardell before this. I'm not any more friends with him afterwards, but maybe I like him a little bit more. So I think similarly, like people, 9/11, I remember as a little kid, like I'd never watched the news for a week straight like that.
Yeah.
And then 5 years later, it's like, okay, I don't know, the PSP's coming out and I'm excited about that. I'm not like permanently now fixed to the television. So I think people are going to have an instinct to go back to as close to what things were before as they can. I think there will be new things that are acceptable as far as like government what government can or can't do. Obviously, there will be some small like restaurants and stuff that won't open back up again. But I don't think it's going to be this drastic, like, holy shit, now we're living in whatever they call the time after the Terminator apocalypse. And I also think that in the middle of a crisis is like the worst time to think you're going to be able to make accurate predictions about what it's going to be like afterwards.
Right. But you just tried to make them. Right. When nothing bad has even, I mean, compared to like nothing bad has even happened yet.
Yeah.
In the United States. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't want to say nothing like to diminish the loss of life that's already been had, but it's 1/10 of what there's going to be. 30% of people are going to be unemployed.
1/10 of what's predicted. And that's like massively downgraded from what they originally predicted, because this
exactly.
is all based on
right.
models that people with incentives to make things seem dire are creating, and they're putting the inputs into.
Yeah, and I would also point out that that's a good mention there, that people with incentives to make things dire, but those people who have those incentives also have a lot of power. And yeah. they're going to be believed by most people, even if they're mm-hmm. not believed by the four co-hosts of this show.
Yep.
So things are going to change. And once yeah. 30% of people become... When people get terrified and desperate of something that they can't see and they don't understand... The compounding effects of this, I would just say, I hope you're right. I really want to be wrong about what I'm saying, but the compounding effects of this could be quite devastating. That could be the collapse of the world economy, the social unrest that follows that, the cyclical nature, the cycle of this thing. Like, maybe it drops off in July and maybe it swoops back up in October. And yeah. maybe we're in that pattern of, you know, that kind of metronome of everybody inside, everybody outside, and goes, and maybe that goes on for a while. Maybe that goes on until 2021. And how do you think that kind of programming of like you're allowed outside, you're not allowed outside, is gonna change everybody? But even
that'd be
like
pretty fucking weird, yeah.
How is people not being able to socialize going to change everybody? Like, there are so many compounding effects that we can't even understand yet. We know it's gonna get worse.
Okay.
And
so I don't know what's going to happen, but here's what I could legitimately see happening as far as government overreach or whatever it might be. Because mm-hmm. of the stimulus, because of the outcry, because of the money grab that's happening from the populace, I could see a universal basic income easily going through after all this.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like, because everyone feels entitled to get their cut of the stimulus right now.
Well, I think that's really interesting, and it makes me start to wonder what the function of Andrew Yang was, right? Who brought this idea and introduced it, and now conveniently is a correspondent on CNN, mm-hmm. But obviously had no chance of ever being elected president, but arrived just in time to become popular and kind of like a cool guy and introduce this alternative to everybody that suddenly is being talked about very seriously.
What, so you think Andrew Yang knew about the virus or something?
No, I'm just saying. I just think it's interesting. I don't think Andrew Yang knew about the virus.
Right. So
it seems inevitable that, I mean, there's been a lot of talk for a lot of years about all kinds of welfare horseshit and $15 an hour minimum wage. So, I mean, it seems kind of natural that somebody would eventually be like, well, just give everybody money all the time.
Yep.
I think large-scale unemployment is the biggest justification that anybody's going to have for universal basic income.
Yep.
Yes.
And, well, what's going to happen to men and women who, like, get meaning from what they do? I heard Andrew Yang talk about this a while ago. He said, what about when, now you could agree with what Andrew Yang's projections for the future were, or you could disagree, but he says when all of these men who are in their 30s and their 40s and they get meaning and purpose out of the things they do, when their jobs are automated, what's going to happen as far as depression and substance abuse? And you're talking 30% of the population now may be susceptible, and that doesn't have anything to do with all of the stress or nervousness or uncertainty that everybody else feels.
But I think along with all the stress and nervousness and uncertainty and all this doom and gloom and 30% unemployment, all these jobs going away and automation replacing it, I think it gets back to, okay, you're looking at the future through the context of today's lens. You cannot predict what types of jobs will be available. And this is a world that I live in on a daily basis where I sell training equipment to schools, right? Schools go, okay, what's the need? How do I serve this need? What's the type of manufacturing that's in demand in my area right now? And they go, I want to buy stuff that trains students on how to do that. Okay. But what they don't do is they don't go, what's the need 5 years from now? What are these undefined jobs that are going to be created? where are we going to be in 5 years? They're only looking at today because they can't predict what the need is going to be in the future.
Those are two different scales of time, but, right? Okay, I totally agree. But what I'm talking about for those people, those 30% of people that we're talking about, even though you're totally right, what happens in the next 120 days is much more important than what happens in the next 5 years. Like, somebody doesn't get any relief from you saying, like, oh, you can't even imagine what the economy will open up for you 4 years from now. There's no solace in that.
Right. I get that. I don't know what the actual timeline in practice will be, but certain industries are going to get hurt the hardest, right? And you can classify those maybe luxury industries and certain service industries. But yeah. How many digital industries are going to immediately pop up and have a massive, massive need? How much manufacturing that's been offshored for decades and decades and decades is going to come right back? How much demand is there going to be to manufacture things more locally or at least stateside?
Yeah.
That demand in the past, it was cheap enough. The hurdles were low enough to do it in China or wherever else.
So that's actually, yeah, I think that's a good point, is that people will probably have lots of questions about globalism, where it's like, you know, there's things I can't find on Amazon, or at least I can't find them that can get them shipped here in a timely manner. So I go to eBay, knowing that I'm just going to have to pay a little more and I could probably have it a little sooner.
And that's just for the end user. That's just consumer goods. Think about,
right,
like, supply chains of businesses and manufacturing and warehousing and all these different things and everything.
Right. They're going to want all of that to change. And I think there's going to be like a lot of questions about globalization, and people are going to say all of this stuff should be more local.
On top of that, though, like, okay, so that's sort of the universal basic income and unemployment, but government overreach. And you talked about the metronome of outside, inside, all of that, right? So far, again, I think it's state by state, city by city, outside, inside. Like around here and everything that I've seen in New Hampshire, no one's not allowed outside, but you're not allowed inside plenty of places.
Right.
And that's the scary part for me, where it's like all of a sudden I'm what, 16 years old again, and I can't be out past curfew. That's the shit that frightens me, where I'm driving around and I'm thinking, just by the fact that I'm driving around, I'm likely to get pulled over. And if people start becoming accustomed to, I don't feel comfortable being out.
Yeah.
And then they're more likely to allow policing of that. Now, I think in New Hampshire, that mentality is far more likely just from the general attitude of people that I see out and about driving around. But around here, I think it's a much more difficult populace to control. Obviously, it's much larger, but go to some small town around here, you're not going to be able to control that populace from going out, whether it's in a car, on a bicycle, on roller skates, on a four-wheeler, a dirt bike, a motorcycle. You can't do it. I can't tell you how many supercars I've seen driving around.
In the past
3 or 4 days, I've seen like 3 Lamborghinis, 4 or 5 Ferraris, some Maseratis, just crazy, crazy shit.
Yeah.
All over the place.
Because the roads are empty.
And that's what I think like kind of speaks to the thing that I think for me, Brett, kind of makes it, I'm not going to make a prediction as far as like particulars of timeline or what is or is not going to be different, but I've seen in my own personal life, I've seen in other people's lives and at scales of the world and stuff, that there's like, there is a movement of growth. There is a movement of retraction. And then there's just this great giant flywheel in people's psychology and the way that natural systems work of like, things change a little bit this way, things change a little bit that way, but mostly they stay the same.
There'll be compensation,
yeah.
Which I think is really interesting to see. And I'm really hopeful about that.
And so I think particularly like in America, if I can step into a place I normally don't like to and say like, as a culture, I think there's still enough independence here that,
yes,
if and when things start to get back to where they were, I don't think they're going to be able to get things shut down like this again. I think if they start saying that, unless there's masses of death, like Spanish flu or like Black Death levels of death, which everybody is saying there's not going to be, people are going to be like, hold on a minute. Okay, we did this once. You caught us off guard. You scared us. it sucks for grandma and grandpa, yeah. but we can't shut down.
That was awful enough. We can't do this
yeah,
again.
Yeah, we're not going to do that again to save grandma and grandpa.
What was worse, the virus or the shutdown? Yeah. Everyone's going to say the shutdown
just accept
was way
the
fuck worse.
Yeah.
And make it, will it become normal? Yeah.
Well, I'd like
it's very hard to predict that.
I'd like, maybe this is optimistic and hopeful, but I'd like to think there's enough like old school American left in America that people are going to say, fuck that. And not listen. Maybe not like civil disobedience, disobey, but just kind of be like, I'd like to see you try. Like, I can tell you, with that announcement from the governor saying all short-term rentals are banned, every fucking short-term rental host is going, wait a minute, but hotels are allowed to operate? Fuck you. Come try and shut me down. Like, there's enough of that. Even if it's not some super principled ideology, it doesn't matter. There's enough, fuck you, I'm going to do what I want. To a degree, no matter what,
the most
people are going
to
do that.
Of liberal Californians are in line waiting to sign up for their 10-day registration period for a handgun.
Right. Yep. And so I think there's enough of that. And I'll tell you, this gets back to kind of the juxtaposition between the feeling I have always got in New Hampshire versus here. New Hampshire seemed like collectively smarter human beings than rural Western Pennsylvania. But they also seemed more obedient, more placated, more sheep-like human beings that just were more controlled in every aspect of their life. Around here...
Culturally.
Yeah.
I think it's more like a cultural thing here.
Right. Yeah. Around here, there's too many people out of control just in this neighborhood alone. If you walk around, you're going to see people, you know, just either being nice and friendly and talking to one another, a kid outside playing basketball 24/7, people riding dirt bikes and four-wheelers, people walking dogs. They're not going to give that up. Like, that's what they're resorting to now. And I think the good side of it is how many people, and this is the difference between shitty people and good people, but how many people right now, maybe who aren't going to work, are doing things that are very, very positive in their life anyway. Whether it's reconnecting with people and having conversations with people just for the sake of talking that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise because they'd be too distracted. Or they're reading or learning a new skill or getting out and about. Like my mom, she is out walking every single day, 20,000 steps a day.
Yeah.
Like that's the best fucking thing that she could possibly do. She's exercising and working out all the time with her neighbor. Luckily,
no,
she
I think
has
that's great.
Neighbor.
I'm sure we're all doing those things. I'm sure a lot of people are, and that's wonderful. And you know, as much as I like get a little nervous seeing how many people there are out there, I was thinking, yeah, that looks nice. I wonder if these people usually get to do this. And
so I think there's a lot of positives that are coming out of this too, where it's sort of reframing people's mentalities, where it's forcing them to decide, like, okay, I could waste away drinking and doing drugs and playing video games 24/7 now because I have nothing else to do and I got my stimulus check and pow, I'm closing the doors and shutting the blinds and that's all I'm doing. But I think, at least in my, what I've witnessed is a lot more people trying to do things, actively choosing things that are healthier.
Maybe just because they're bored to shit.
But I think it's reframing their mentality and they're
they're
kind of forced into a position where they have to make that decision. And I don't think it's a socioeconomic status sort of thing. I have actively been exploring all these neighborhoods and I'm watching this and seeing this. And it's not like it's one type of person that I see out and about doing something relatively healthy.
Yeah.
It's everybody, all walks of life, all you know, it's everything. And
well, this could be one of those things where it scares people healthy as well.
Yeah.
Maybe people start thinking
I think
about
that's
that
a positive
a lot
effect.
More.
So yeah. When you talk about things never going back to the same, I think people are going to go back into their routines. People are going to go back to work. They're going to get stressed and they're going to maybe give up on some of these new practices that they've embraced since the shutdown of everything. But for the most part, I could see a positive shift in this, at least for the immediate future, when things begin to normalize again.
I think for some people, like anything, like the internet, I mean, everything is like, everything is just a push in one direction or the other based on which direction you're already leaning or going. This is true with money. This is true with alcohol. This is true with the internet, right? So it will be true with this. If somebody is in a shitty mood and they say, I'm going to go to a bar and get drunk, it doesn't fix their shitty mood. It probably exacerbates it. If somebody is fucking stupid and they win the lottery, it's not like money makes their life better. It probably just magnifies all of the problems they already have. And, you know, we see the internet. We see how there's people like us who use it to create wonders of comedy like Puke and the Gang and then Portman Show. And then there's other people who just become completely dependent on it in all kinds of ways. Right. So this, I mean, this is the same kind of opportunity slash liability for people based on which way they lean. So, yeah, I love your optimism. I hope it applies to enough people. I don't know whether it does or not, but either way, whether we have an optimistic or a cautious slash cynical approach about this whole thing, the outcome will be a much different world. I hope it's better. I hope it is ultimately better.
The only thing, the biggest thing that I fear is if people get used to these restrictions on travel.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like air travel and international travel. I mean like day-to-day travel.
I can't imagine.
And only, well, there's plenty of people that are literally just going, I'm not leaving the house. It has been decreed that I should not leave my house.
But there's a certain type of person that's going to do that. And then there's other, but I don't know how long they're going to do that. Because eventually I think all people aren't, you know, I mean, it's basically we're all under house arrest to some extent. And I believe the majority of people are not going to put up with it forever.
No, I think the largest thing that's making that an actual physical reality is that there's not anything to go out for except the parks and the grocery stores. And
the fear, the fear of catching this disease, which is a real risk.
Well, the scary thing to me are the people who so quickly embraced without any question or pushback, like, oh yeah, I'm not going out anywhere. I'm not doing anything. And I'm now shaming those who do.
Yeah.
Like that quick embrace. And I think it's like,
it's kind of like the childish mentality of the kid that tattles on all his classmates.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's like,
but it's a combination of that and an increasing percentage of the populace that.
Did we talk about that last week? Sorry, Andrew. Did we talk about that last week on the show? I feel like we did, that there's now this new sort of virtue signaling around I stay home and do what I'm told.
Yeah, there
it's
is.
The PC people, for sure.
But there's that.
Yeah.
But I think I feel like the threat there is the combination of that intermingling and mixing with an ever-growing percentage of people who are perfectly fine to just stay at home because their lives are so non-reality-based lives. They're completely digital lives where their life didn't change when the shutdown happened. Like, what were they doing anyway? They were at home.
Working
they were going to work. And that was it. And,
hi.
How about, puke, has your life changed?
No, not really.
Right. But at least you go out and you're not like advocating for the control of other people. But how many of these people are like, oh, yeah, I was so sick and tired of seeing everybody out enjoying their lives while I'm staying home and being a miserable shit.
I was kind of hoping that, that I would not have to go to work for a while because then I could get some shit done around the house, like projects. And then I'd be able to go out and like find some hiking spots or something. But the main reason that I don't, well, I could have gone out today, but I didn't. But like, I've been working so much that there's not really the opportunity to change my life too much.
But how many people welcome this opportunity because now they don't feel shame that they're not going out and experiencing their own life?
I don't think that could be a part of it, but I think most of what I'm seeing is the kind of people who say, hey, what I do and what I believe, it makes me a good person. And what I do and believe now is that I should stay home. And if you don't stay home, you're a bad, irresponsible person. And the truth is you might be. But what I'm just saying is that that horizontal policing that we're seeing of these same people who are just doing all this shit with like identity politics issues, because it is like the Venn diagram has a huge overlap there from my observation is, you know, that's not a good trend either. It's like all of the negative energy that we were seeing in these other areas just sort of transferred into that. With much higher stakes, where now all these fucking, you know, pontificators are actually right. Like, yeah, you probably should.
But they were wrong about
it. I hate to say it, but you probably should, be cautious and stay home when you can and, like, not be in public. Like, those are all good ideas right now.
I think it's going to be interesting to see the effect, particularly of that group, though. For a couple of reasons. One, at a larger scale than the anecdote that I have, like a lot of the Democrats are starting to move back to their like politicking and they're saying, well, Trump didn't handle this right. He responded too slowly. And these were the same Democrats who were like, Nancy Pelosi is like, oh, it's the Chinese New Year. It's racist to not go out and celebrate that. Everyone should go to China and celebrate it. And
a fucking
what,
month ago.
Yeah.
A month, 5 weeks ago.
Yeah. No, they shouldn't. The personal anecdote that I have is I went to a favorite grocery establishment of the show, Trader Joe's, the other day. Trader Joe's way ahead of the curve as far as the like putting the tape down and stay 6 feet apart and only let so many people in the store stuff.
Okay.
I was in the bread line at Trader Joe's the other day. And on my drive there, I see this guy who he might not actually be homeless, but he's got enough of a look as he's riding his bike with his beard and his hat and a little craze in his eye that I'm like, this guy might be homeless. When I get to Trader Joe's and I'm standing in line, homeless guy on the bike is like riding through and he's like, are there shortages now? And he's got the like widest puppy eyes possible and like the most innocent tone in his voice. Is this what we've come to? Are we running out of food? And the Trader Joe's PC girl who's there like enforcing the social distancing is like, excuse me, no, there are not shortages. We're just limiting the amount of people in line and we're practicing social distancing in and outside of the store. She says, as he's like trying to maneuver his bike through the line and he's definitely getting within 6 feet of multiple people. And she just has this look of disdain on her face, like this scum who is not doing the right thing right now. And this is the same bitch who a few weeks earlier would have thought you were a terrible person for chastising this person experiencing homelessness.
Interesting. Yeah. What are your thoughts about the people that say, you know, like I was talking about the photo I saw online of people at the beach, and there were comments where like, yeah, but what if everybody does that? What if everybody goes to the beach? And
then most people won't get sick, and most people won't die.
But what's wrong with going to the beach as long as you stay apart from people, or if you're only with
Nothing.
People that you're not?
Brett just made the statement, you should stay at home. You should only go out when you have to. Fuck that. I could not disagree with you more, Brett. I didn't say that.
I said maybe that is what is actually safest. Right?
Sure.
And that's why I paused and said, like, don't straw man what I'm saying or try to simplify what I'm saying just so you can grandstand about whatever your point is. Like, okay. That's not what I said.
But that, so
I said that is it probably safer? Yes, and that's when I paused and said, oh, shit, because I don't want to say that.
Right.
And I'm not right. And I'm not doing that.
Okay, so that statement frightens me because the people who want to control other people are going to make that statement.
But they're not going to say I heard it on Portman Show.
I don't know where else they would hear it now.
But what I fear the most is unrelenting control that is just being fueled in the name of safety. That's always what pushes unrelenting control, right? So we talk about what's going to be different after this. If everything is just allowed to happen in the name of safety, that's how we have the auto industry we have today, which is super sad and pathetic. I can't stand it. I know that's lame to everybody else, but it's true. The auto industry sucks. Cars suck today because everything has been ruined in the name of safety. And I can see that applying to almost everything in life. And when the statement is made, the safest thing to do, it's probably best to stay inside and only go out when you have to. I'm going out whenever I can. I'm going out as often as I can, but there is nothing that I'm doing that's unsafe.
Right. No, same. And I'm doing the – so there you go. We're actually agreeing because that's exactly what I do. I go out whenever I want, but I don't just go into a grocery store.
Right.
I'm not running around
high-fiving strangers all day.
Right.
Like I drove today. I went for a nice drive, and then I met up with people working on a house that I'm working on. So I interacted with two people, and I'm not going to not interact with them out of fear. But it's two people that I'm interacting with and coming into contact with besides the people that are in the house right now with me.
I went to Osborne's house and ate ribeye.
There you go. So, but then I
outside on his porch at a very long picnic table, the longest picnic table you've ever seen. And we sat on opposite sides of it.
Is it grass fed ribeye?
Yes.
Okay.
I asked.
But so that's the thing. Like, there is no scenario in which people can, besides the grocery store, besides the places that are allowed to have interactions, that's where people are interacting. And those are the most dangerous places. The danger isn't coming from people going out and enjoying their lives and doing things and riding their bikes and going to parks and walking their dogs.
Well, that's part of the
danger is coming from what is allowed. So when that shit is allowed, but everything else is limited in the name of safety, that's what frightens me. And when you have enough people saying, well, we'd all be better off if we just did this. And I'm an introvert. I'm perfectly happy staying at home. Therefore, everyone else should be too.
But that's the fuck of it, Andrew. It's not a black and white thing. It's not a, but that's the problem here, right?
It's mostly a yellow thing.
Because the truth is that as far as like the control of the spread of the disease is concerned, that is true. But then if you talk about economically or as far as people's mental health is concerned, we'll all be better off is not true.
It's a narcissistic mentality to assume that like, well, I'm safe, but everyone else that's going out, they're not doing it safely. So it's like, you know, you should allow people to act like sovereign individuals, like adults, and just trust that, you know, the government should trust that their people are going to do the right thing. But everybody has been fed like so much bullshit over the decades from governments that they, you know, you're going to have groups of people that don't trust that the government says, like, you know, okay, you can go outside, just don't, you know, be in large groups of 50 people or some shit. And then you're inevitably going to get groups of idiots that, you know, are going to gather together. And there was some preacher that was going to do a giant Easter thing down in Westmoreland County here in Pennsylvania.
I like that guy.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, like, how do you juggle this problem where it's like you can allow human beings to be sovereign adults and make their own decisions based on the information they've been given? Or you can live in a society where the government tells you you can't smoke and they tax the shit out of all these bad things like alcohol and cigarettes and, you know, fast cars and staying at home. Now, I don't have any faith that that's going to happen.
Right.
But it would be nice if that was the mentality that people had instead of just, you know, being gleeful that the government is controlling everybody's lives.
What I'm more worried about than that is that going back to like the 9/11 times 10 thing, and this is why I say the world's not going back to normal, even though I hope it will be better someday. I hope I hope it's soon. I hope it's this year.
Someday.
You know, I hope by the end of the year, we're all laughing and high fiving. But just remembering being like a young man after 9/11 happened and I had just started working, you know, my first job. And I remember watching that on television. 99%+ of the population was on the exact same page, paralyzed by that fear. Mm-hmm. Everybody agreed with the response that came down from the television. And how many people today are glued to their televisions or fucking CNN.com or the New
Way
York
fewer.
Times or whatever it is.
Way
all,
fewer.
Wait, yeah, you're right. A whole lot fewer. And people are far more skeptical. Case in point, we just watched the movie Hoax.
Well, wait a minute. That was minor compared to this.
I don't think that's accurate.
Okay. Why?
Because I think we have to see the ultimate death numbers because that's going to tell a lot about what people are going to think and feel and allow going forward.
All right. Okay. So we had, I mean, how many deaths have there been in this country so far?
Yeah. But so like the thing that is sticking in my mind, and I'm curious to see how it goes is like, where is this going to end up compared to the flu? Because if this is, I don't know, twice as bad as the flu, if it's 100 times worse than the flu as far as like people getting infected and people dying, okay, holy shit, that's bad. If this ends up being just as bad as the flu, people are going to be like, hey, what the fuck did we just do there? And why did we do that? But I think it's different in that, one, the narrative is not anywhere near. I just listened to Eric Weinstein on Joe Rogan's podcast, and I think they had a good use. It's not mainstream media anymore. It's legacy media. Because some of those news shows, they get, 500,000 views when they're on at night? Joe Rogan podcast will fucking farts that. Like, do that down the chain. Like, people get their information and their kind of shared sense of what the story of what's going on is from way more places now.
Here, wait a minute. That's as if to say there's the legacy media and then there's this renegade media shits in the face of mainstream media. And all of these messages, like how many people are on, okay, how many people were on Facebook in 2001? Zero.
Yes.
How many people are on Facebook today? A third of the world. And Facebook does the bidding of mainstream media and government. So that is a huge kind of leverage that didn't. So that's cool. Yeah. That people have Instagrams where they say iconoclastic shit, but Facebook has leverage that the media and the government didn't even exist 20 years ago.
Deaths in the United States, 9,420, according to what I just Googled.
Yeah.
Which so is that's in 3 weeks. So that's a 9/11 a week for 3 weeks.
The and other thing that's different is in also talking about media and like the story weaving is it's just not anywhere near as strong of a visual, I think, as far as the actual thing that's the problem. People certainly no, and see I hope the toilet paper sorry. Off the shelves. People are certainly like seeing the face masks and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not like, holy shit, here are these giant buildings that we are watching for weeks on end go down over and over again. Everyone's talking about this, and it's those brown people over there in Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever that are the problem.
Saudi Arabia.
It's this kind of unseen virus thing, which people, I think, have a harder time conceptualizing, and so you're going to have a harder time
like, for sure.
really getting people to buy in and stick to this is the enemy that we now must change everything about our lives for.
So there's no shock value, and it will just be like normal, like, there's, 3,000 people died this week, just like
I
last
think
week.
There's less, and especially, again, it will be normalized if it ends up being just as bad as far as mortality rate goes as the flu. Then, yeah, it's going to be, well, shit, why weren't we worried about the H3N2 or whatever the virus was that killed a bunch of people in 2017 and 2018? Versus it's like, yeah, you don't normally have planes crashing into giant towers in New York. So that is radically different. Tens of thousands of people in this country alone die from the flu every day. Millions of people die every year from all sorts of viruses and bacteria and stuff like that.
But these are like 3 weeks ago kinds of arguments. Like the death rate is 20 times the flu.
Okay, let's make the death rate 200 times. Okay, if the response is this extreme to just sheer numbers, then why are we still allowed to even operate vehicles and exist in vehicles? Because there's far more deaths in car accidents than any of this shit. And these deaths don't affect immune deficient people and old people only.
40,000 a year.
Yeah. So if you want to talk about numbers, there are things that are far more deadly than this. So I think the numbers being spread out over a large populace or only affecting certain types of people, I don't think it's as impactful. So when you're comparing 9/11 and saying this is like 10 9/11s, okay, then make 10 9/11s happen across the country in 10 different places, but each one of those is isolated to one building or one stadium or one group of people. That's a whole lot fucking scarier.
Yeah.
Then, okay, people are getting sick. There's a disease. There's a new AIDS. There's a car accidents. Whatever it is, spread out across an entire country. So I don't think the numbers make as much sense. It's far less traumatizing. It's far less emotional. You don't have a country in tears over this.
That's an interesting point. Yeah,
but the
really
response
don't.
Is way more severe.
Yeah,
but prolonged. But what you have right now is a period where everybody is like, yeah, they're out going for walks, and people are being nice to each other. But lots of people are sort of in this paralysis of uncertainty right now. So this is a very different kind of situation. And maybe even like starting the conversation by even comparing it to 9/11 wasn't like a fair thing to do. Because right. maybe the only comparison that you can make is that it is a time where people are basically mentally, like logically, rationally immobilized by fear. And the government uses that as an opportunity, whether the whole crisis is entirely real, entirely imagined, or like 9/11 was, and this probably is, some part real and some part dramatized. And I'm seeing like people are sending me all kinds of weird shit. Like people, I mean, all of this could be Photoshop, sure, but like photos showing up saying like, this is what it looks like in New York, but the photo's actually from Italy. People surrounding somebody on a stretcher, all wearing respirators, but then you look at the person in the stretcher and it's a fucking mannequin. Like what? And this is like, but it's not like here's a bunch of people surrounding, but there's weird shit going on, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so is this just the you know, sort of skeleton crew mainstream media at this point scrambling around to stay on top of this? So it's like, oops, this is the picture from the wrong place, or oops, this is a training exercise where they practice how to do this with a mannequin. Who knows, right?
I think it's dipshits online that just want to get you know,
I think it could be that too. It could be just people making fake memes to get likes and shit, or to comfort themselves by saying, oh, this whole thing is fake. You know, this is a hoax. So that's a way of dealing with their own fear.
I do think there's a bunch of, you know, shitty little fat little gay lords at home that are just going,
wait a minute.
Oh.
No. Fat little gay lords at home are great.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, there's a bunch of shitty people.
What are the shitty little dickheads at home?
Shitty little dickheads. Okay. So there's a bunch of shitty little dickheads at home that are like, oh, now everybody is forced into my world, the world where I have control, the world where I can be a bully.
And they like that. You think they like that?
I think they do like that. I think that they're getting attention now that they normally get ignored about.
Yeah. There's certainly a
but
segment of the population.
To get back to the media thing, I think the legacy media versus social media, I think social media is a lot more sinister. I think they have a lot more control. I think they have a lot more influence. Because the legacy media, let's really play this through. If the legacy media, the old school media, the shit my grandparents are watching, if we play this whole virus thing through, anybody who's still stuck in front of the TV watching legacy media, well, they're going to die. Corona's going to get them.
Yeah. Well, cardiovascular disease kills 840,000 people a year in the U.S., I guess,
so
according to Larry here in the studio.
What's left? You know, then you have social media, and that's influencing way more people, and it's way more substantial than Fox News or CNN, I think.
And the leverage is, like, these messages are being a bit, like, go on your Facebook. It says, do you want all of your COVID-19 information in one place?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Who created that place?
But,
you know? Every social media is doing that. Even just Google, you go to their homepage to search for something, and it's like, where do you want to know about COVID?
Fine. But the reason I brought this up...
Uh-huh.
And the reason I pointed that out is I also think, compared to 9/11, people in general are far more skeptical of the government and the media. Because after 9/11, everybody, like Brett said, unanimously got on board with the government and the media. Everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, right, today, well, everyone is like, this is fucked bullshit.
Well, part of that
not
is...
everybody is like that.
You're right.
I mean, I wish that everybody was like... Well, I don't wish that either. See, again, so things are not black and white. I wish that people could be like, all right, I understand the science of how this disease works, where it incubates from 2 to 14 days, where it can sit on surfaces, where maybe it can pass through the air, where maybe it isn't safe to be in a confined space without a mask on. Okay, I understand all that, but I'm not going to let that be used as an excuse to change my whole way of life. If everybody could just strike that balance, that would be wonderful. But these are not the times for that. When people are afraid and uncertain, they either go one way or the other for some reason.
But I think a silver lining is that people are inherently, much larger percentage of people are far more skeptical and untrusting of media, of social networks, of government.
I think that is actually going to be the silver lining, because the media, like the Trump-hating media, which is... the most powerful. I mean, Fox might be the best rated, but like the things that people turn to, what's on at the fucking airport and, you know, any other place where you can't change the channel is CNN. And they're still trying to play the same Trump's fault, Trump's bad kind of game, but they're going to have to be like measured against reality day by day by day.
Yeah.
So this could actually be a time where they completely fall apart, because people are like, wait a minute, you're cutting together these clips of the press conference that are like 5 seconds each and make Trump look like a buffoon. But because I'm so interested in what's going on, I watched an hour of it yesterday and your reporting doesn't line up with what I'm seeing. So fuck you. Like, maybe more people will start doing that and that will be great.
I think so, because unlike 9/11, like we have so many more sources we can easily fact check on our own to be like, oh, well, here's 5 different YouTube videos that clearly point out how that information has been skewed.
And I will tell you this, sorry, not to be a conspiracy theorist after the fact. When 9/11 happened, if you went to the internet, no web page would load for like where I was anyway, for like 2 hours. You couldn't refresh a Yahoo homepage.
Really?
Google didn't even exist then, or if it did, no one knew.
It did. It just wasn't very popular.
Yeah. But you couldn't get news for like an hour or two, I remember.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. Which was also really scary, because the internet by then was pretty reliable. Like, you could hit refresh and see new stuff.
Hmm.
Well, who feels better now?
Not me.
Well, here's what I did wrong in today's show, and then maybe we can go around the table and everybody can give an example of something they did wrong.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like I was in an opposing position, at least to Andrew and maybe to Alex, I kind of doubled down on that. But I think the way to feel better is to, if you have five parts, if you have a pie with five slices to fill, you know, like a little pie chart, one, know what can be done to you. And four, know what you can do to make your life better day in and be grateful for every day and be aware of the fact that tomorrow could be very different. And a week from today will likely be somewhat different. So be prepared, you know, be grateful. And I think from that, you can get a fair amount of calm.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it certainly helps to be educated and prepared as best as possible.
All right, but I would never watch the news about this. Holy shit. You'd go nuts.
You know what's a good tool to be prepared? You can go to thepooptool.com and put in how many toilet paper rolls you have, and it'll tell you how long that's going to last.
Mm, nice.
Like, for instance, I just got 18 mega rolls today of Charmin, which I think that's more than this actually is. And there's two people in this household on a regular basis, myself and Andrew. That'll last 108 days, according to this.
And I've never used any of your toilet paper in this household.
Oh, and we'll have to produce 86 kilograms of shit.
We can make a garden.
Yeah.
We're going around the table and saying what we did wrong in today's show. Is that what's happening?
Well, that's what I did. I mean, if other people feel like in a period of reflection, now that we're all calm, that they did anything wrong. I just felt like the balance that I found was like, yes, this is a real thing. Like I said at the end there, it's serious. Be cautious and, you know, take the next necessary steps to keep yourself and the people you're close to safe. But do not be so willing to surrender.
Remain skeptical, so to speak. Like, yes, a healthy dose of skepticism.
All right.
But
well,
skepticism without action is kind of useless. Hmm. So be thinking about how you can stay a step ahead of what's happening.
And then take action.
I made some mistakes. Like, I thought a lot of this shit that's happening now was going to happen a lot sooner, especially in New York, which is why I left when I did. Obviously, I would have been safe there for another month. So actually, I don't know. I mean, I would assume I could still drive through New York. So
You might just have to go to the like a long way around New York City.
Oh, I don't go anywhere near New York City when I
That's
make that
smart.
Trip.
Okay. Although traffic is probably pretty light at this time.
So what I did wrong is I attacked Brett because I had him personifying people who may be trying to control me. So I was coming from a standpoint of fear.
Yeah.
For what the future could look like if the scared people start yelling too much. And they see me just simply moving about.
If this turns into
threat.
Some sort of East Germany Stasi situation,
exactly.
Where all the neighbors are ratting out other neighbors, mm-hmm. And,
like they're doing in real Germany right now,
but in Europe, yeah.
The problem is, I know what that feels like mentally because I have been there as a boy,
yeah.
Without a license for most of those years. I know what that feels like. I know how frightening that is, and I also know how I react when I feel threatened. And maybe I have more self-control than I used to, but my reaction is, let's get the fuck out of here. Yeah, there's a cop chasing us, but let's get the fuck out of here anyway, because I don't want to see what happens when that cop catches me.
So like a deer, you just start running?
Yeah, but not towards the cop.
No, well, deer run away from things.
Sometimes they run right in front of your car.
I mean, if it's headlights, right, I mean, that's a different situation because they're fucking dumb.
But I do want to say that what Brett was saying about being grateful and, you know, trying to make the most of things, that is exactly what I've been doing. Like, I wouldn't be able to be grateful if I was sitting in the fucking house all day. If I wasn't going
I write
out
a list.
And enjoying the neighborhoods and driving around and being grateful I have a convertible and sunshine looking at all these people and seeing the best in all these people. If it wasn't for that, yeah, I wouldn't be looking on the bright side and I would be a lot more doom and gloom. And no offense, but that's what, like you said at the beginning of the show, Brett, the weather in New Hampshire relative to here sucks. And I'm really glad I'm not, I'm not there. Like that sounds fucking
out
awful.
In shorts today.
Yeah. So what do you guys do wrong?
Condoms sold out.
Oh,
I've heard that. Interesting.
I think I saw it was like 80% of condoms are made in like one factory in Malaysia or something like that.
That's where all the latex is. I know one thing about Malaysia, and I know they have lots of rubber trees.
Huh.
Malaytex. Malaytex. Yeah.
What were you going to say there, Andrew?
What did you guys do
wrong? What did we do wrong?
Yeah. On this show today.
Oh, nothing?
Okay.
I don't know.
Alex?
You started the show wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
We had to restart the show.
You know what I did wrong is I brought up a topic that wasn't related to this stupid fucking disease.
Yeah.
I tried to have fun for seconds.
Yeah. Don't you know every single minute of every piece of media has to be about coronavirus?
Yeah. I felt like we'd done enough and I tried to bring some levity.
Well, I agree. And I think levity is needed and necessary. I was talking to the chat about this. I did not want to force a topic shift, especially when that's all we're thinking about is this one topic.
And it is a big part of what's going on. I will say, here's maybe to try to bridge the two worlds. When I was in line at the Home Depot yesterday, first I learned, wait, don't go to Home Depot on Saturday. Because every time I've gone to Home Depot during this thing, there's no line. Like, they have the stuff set up for the line, but I'm like, I'm just walking right in. You go on a Saturday, even though people are home and not working to some degree, or they're working remotely, they still don't understand that for years, those of us who don't have regular 9-to-5s know that you go to the store at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday because most people aren't there. So that's
well,
still
I don't
case.
Know how many people aren't working. I feel like there's quite a few people working.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, you go to Home Depot on the weekend, you have to wait in line, you go during the day on a weekday and you don't. But when I was in this line, I did this like a week or two ago when I first stood in line at Trader Joe's. I was like, ooh, I got to get my where were you during coronavirus picture and like take a picture of the line at Trader Joe's. Somebody was doing this. Multiple people are doing this in the Home Depot line. I was like, oh, they didn't do this already. And I made a conscious point to make sure that I was sort of facing them and I was smiling because I thought, you know, that's maybe what people need.
So well said, Alex. That is just a gem of an I totally agree.
Wave at everybody.
Wave and smile. I've been waving here. You know, this isn't even Pittsburgh. This isn't even a neighborly place. I wave to every motherfucker that I see.
How are you holding up? That's my new phrase of 2020.
Take care.
Yeah.
Take care, Richard.
Stay safe.
Stay safe, Richard. I'll see you soon. I'm even waving at the Middle Eastern guy who lives kind of across the street in this complex. I saw him high-five a guy after blowing his nose. And this dude touches his face, because I sit on the stoop sometimes and I watch him. This dude touches his face more than Jeff Goldblum.
Jeez. And each time it's like a small 9/11.
Right. Jeff Goldblum touches his own face, not this guy's face. I don't even think Jeff Goldblum and this guy know each other.
I almost forgot. I have two emails. Should I read them?
Yes.
Just Jeff Goldblum is always touching his lips with his index finger when he's thinking. He goes, yes.
Before you do the emails, I would like to say, Andrew and Brett did there, I was wrong because of when we were talking vehemently. I think I had similar feelings of like charged up, like, ooh, there's against stuff going on now.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
like, how much of that is going to exist in people where they're like, you're trying to control me. Fuck you. There's a lot of
I forgive you.
And we're supposed to be friends. But I honestly, actually, I don't feel like that was a wrong thing or to do, because I knew when I sensed that, I was like, yeah, this is just a moment where we, to varying degrees, believe opposing things and we're discussing them for sure. But that's okay. Like, we can both be like arguing a point vehemently, and that doesn't mean we're not friends or it's bad to be arguing with people.
Right. And that's fine. What? I think this is a great segment. If we're ever going to have segments on Portman Show, we should end. What did we all do? Go around the table. What did we all do wrong today?
They call it thorns and roses in the Boy Scouts. When you're at the end of a camp out, you say one thing that you liked the best about the camp out and one thing that you liked the least about the camp out.
They also called it an awful poison song.
Thank you guys for doing self-reflection. I think it's valuable. I think we don't all suck. It makes us better.
PortmanShow.com/VIP. Help us out if you got any money left, if you're still employed.
Give us your stimulus.
And if you're not, oh man, tell all your friends that are sitting at home doing nothing to listen to Portman Show. or School Sucks Project or some other podcast.
Sign up for the PCL and get discomfort zones, get music shows, get an update about Puke's job coming in the near future.
Oh, yeah, I still got to do that. Shit.
And other shit.
Other poop at pooptool.com.
You know, I know I got all this bourbon, but I'm drinking a whole lot less now. When I do drink, it better be while I'm talking into a microphone. So
yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Maybe I'll talk to the Seven and do a show. Who knows? If I get a little antsy, a little bored, if it's raining outside, maybe I'll just sit here and drink and
just
talk to people.
Just come down here
and
start a live stream, start a show.
Why not? Till then.
Bye.
Let's go play Frisbee.
Who has barrels?
They've got to have barrels.
Wineries?
Maine's the kind of place that would have barrels.
Yeah, I feel like they're just floating down rivers all the time.
Coopers. Cooper is a person who makes barrels.
Buffalo.
Yeah, but why would they be in Maine? What would they put in these barrels?
Wine, whiskey.
Yeah.
Things, Chardonnay.
Salt pork.
Kimchi.
Oh, yeah. The number one product of Maine.
Welcome to Portland. I guess I'm not enthusiastic enough. Andrew's flailing wildly. Welcome to Poor Man's Show, episode 419. During this week 27 of the pandemic, it feels like. I don't know. How many weeks has it actually been? Four?
Three.
Five, six, three, two, one.
Start over.
What? How?
Yeah, that was terrible. That
you count it down. It felt like a restart.
And not include the bad start in the show for
I will.
New listeners.
I'm
I know, but then, new
listeners
go, oh, this show sucks.
They will anyway.
New listeners. What kind of listeners?
New. Hello? New.
I'll tell you what.
I'm barely even paleo.
I'm sick of getting so elaborate with my food. A couple nights ago, I made kale chips, and I started thinking of what I should do to my steak and how to make a nice fancy salad. And I thought, you know what? Fuck that. And I just put a bunch of raw spinach in a bowl, and I ate that, and the kale chips, and then the steak, I just salted it and ate it, and that was it.
That was last night.
And you know what? I've become Andrew with food. I'm like, all right, protein bar and a can of tuna. Here we go.